Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. In that war, there are a few more heroic figures, in my estimation, than our guest each week, Andy McCarthy. He actually missed last week because he was on vacation, but he's tan rested and we're told resi, and we're delighted to have him back. He brings with him, of course, the skills of a former federal prosecutor, now a columnist at National Review Online and PJ Media. He is also a frequent guest and very valued commentator at Fox News. Always glad to have him with us. Welcome back, Andy.
Great to be here, Frank. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm a little distressed, I must say, about the deal that apparently is now cooked as we speak, expecting an announcement momentarily, but presumably it is all but done, if not actually done. And by the time this airs, will be touted as a great accomplishment for American diplomacy. What do you make of it?
Well, as I've said from the beginning, Frank, I think that the whole premise of the negotiation is disastrously flawed, because the problem here in this equation is not nuclear weapons. There are plenty of countries that have nuclear weapons. The problem is the Iranian regime, which is an incorrigible enemy of the United States and the globe's leading sponsor of jihadist terrorism.
And they make no bones about that, really, do they?
No, no bones about that. And it's also, you know, even if you were going to indulge some of the fantasy premises of this negotiation, the fact is that, you know, the Iranians don't need nuclear power for civilian purposes, and they have a ballistic missiles program, which is plainly designed to have nuclear payloads. At least that's the ambition of it. So the whole thing is about a massively reckless, I guess I can use willful blindness here, because this is the this may be the pinnacle example of it. But you know, we obviously have an enemy of the United States that wants the world's most dangerous weapon. And we have an administration that's willing to give it to them, notwithstanding the regime's track record and notwithstanding the administration's many promises, which many of us always suspected were empty promises.
It's really quite an indictment when you list all of the things that they promised and have not come to pass. Willful Blindness, of course, is the name of one of your marvelous books, Andy. I'm sure you caught the former Obama director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, he called it willful ignorance. Whichever, the willfulness is the common denominator there, and that's what's so troubling. You know, a number of us have observed that this has a sort of eerie parallel to that guy in a cockpit, you know, locking out the pilot and with the screaming passengers in the background flying the plane into a mountain. I can't help but think that there's something of that same kind of, well, self-preoccupied seeking of a legacy by this president that is putting us all at mortal risk. And it's worrying indeed. You've written, Andy, about one senator who has come up with a strategy for countering this that you think is quite commendable. Talk about Senator Ted Cruz's plan.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what Senator Cruz has the right formula here, which is that, you know, the problem is the regime, even more than the nuclear weapons, and that we shouldn't even indulge a discussion with them. We should, in fact, be ratcheting sanctions up rather than talking about dispensing with them until they convincingly demonstrate that they have abandoned terrorism and the sponsorship of it, which would seem to me to be the most elementary element of this whole thing, and the one that Obama, for whatever reason, thinks should be disconnected. I mean, I find it very difficult to wrap my brain around this. It's kind of like, you know, if you had a murder suspect and you were the investigator, that you would somehow try to disconnect the murder from the rest of your investigation of the suspect. Get him to come to the table with you, reason with you, decide that you're a nice guy and worth cooperating with, and then, you know, say to yourself, that murder thing, we'll get to that later on. I mean, the only reason you're in a negotiation with the, you know, or in an investigation in the first place is because of the murder. The only reason that we have the relationship we have with Iran at the moment is because they're a state sponsor of terrorism and an enemy of the United States.
The metaphor is particularly apt because there's been a lot of murder at their hands.
Yeah, there sure has. That's right.
As well, you know, including of an awful lot of Americans. Andy, speaking of getting away with murder, what do you make of Hillary Clinton's having apparently permanently wiped clean the server that had an awful lot of government property on it, at least at one point? And there may be some reason to be concerned when she was destroying that evidence.
Well, I think, first of all, Frank, I wouldn't take her word for what time it is, but I would certainly not take her word for it, or her lawyers, or anyone's word for it, that the server has been wiped clean. I mean, I think that's something that they've put out for public consumption, but those of us who've done these investigations know that even if she took a sledgehammer to the server, there's a chance that you could get some, if not all, of the data off it if you got all of the pieces. They're very hard to wipe clean, and people who know what they're doing can generally speaking, you know, get to the bottom of it. Moreover, I would point out that, you know, if what she claimed were true, that, you know, the stuff that she didn't turn over were just harmless stuff like, you know, plans for Chelsea's wedding and the like, why would anyone go through the effort that it would take, which is monumental, to actually wipe that clean to make it disappear? And it just doesn't make any sense. But they shouldn't take her word for that. Obviously, you know, the server, the physical server, needs to be surrendered. And the Justice Department, I believe, is derelict in not seeking it, not only because she's hoarding government records on it. I believe she's obstructing an ongoing federal criminal investigation. And that's the indictment of the Benghazi defendant. You know, let's not forget, the Justice Department has accused him of participation in a terrorist attack. And Mrs. Clinton was at the forefront of saying that it wasn't a terrorist attack. The government's obliged to turn over to the defense anything that could be exculpatory. So, you know, those records are relevant.
As we're speaking, there will shortly be a press event hosted by Judicial Watch, who has been really at the forefront of finding out this information about emails and so much more when the government, the Congress, as well as the executive branch have really let us down. Is it your expectation, Andy, that the argument will be made that in addition to all of the things that you've just talked about, that there are real concerns as to whether classified information, certainly highly sensitive information, if not strictly speaking classified documents, were also on that server and therefore exposed to possible penetration and exploitation by enemies of this country, and that really would rise to a criminal kind of problem for Mrs. Clinton?
Yeah, I'd be very concerned about that, Frank. And, you know, as I've said before, there's a difference. You know, they're very careful. They say, you know, I never kept classified documents on the server. Well, I imagine she may be right about that, because you have to classify documents are actually on a separate system in the government. But those people in the government who have clearance to review classified documents are not allowed to talk about them. That's the classified information that's in the documents. And it would be, you know, given that her daily duties would have involved, you know, a great percentage of the time information that was in the nature of national defense secrets and the like, it seems highly unlikely to me that her communications would not have involved at least some classified information. And that's quite aside from the fact that there are also indications that she seems to have had this private offline intelligence system that was operating.
This is a subject for a whole nother conversation, Andy, and we look forward to having it with you next week. In the meantime, I thank you so much for all that you do for all of us at National Review Online and, of course, PJ Media and elsewhere, and for the books, including most recently Faithless Execution, making the political case for Barack Obama's impeachment. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us soon. Peter Pry joins us next. We'll talk about this Iran deal and the electromagnetic pulse threat from that country and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states. One that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Fred Fleitz for the Center for Security Policy. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned last weekend that the Iran-Lasan-Yemen axis is very dangerous to humanity and must be stopped. Netanyahu was referring to Iran's efforts to expand its influence in the Middle East, including in Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, and recently in Yemen, while Western states are engaged in nuclear talks with Iran in Lausanne, Switzerland, that appear on track to produce a deal which will not reduce the threat from Iran's nuclear weapons program and will legitimize this program. Iran is backing Houthi rebels that recently ousted the elected president of Yemen. Iranian Supreme Leader Khamenei said at a rally this month, "Death to America." Netanyahu is right. The Iran-Lasan-Yemen axis is a threat to humanity. It is time to stop the nuclear talks. No deal with Iran is better than a bad deal. Mr. President, no deal. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm pleased to say joined by one of my friends and colleagues at the Secure the Grid Coalition, a man I've had the privilege of knowing and working with for a long time, one of the country's preeminent experts on matters involving the vulnerability of our electric grid and the threats that could give rise to potentially catastrophic disruptions of it. He is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Today he is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, an advisory committee to the United States Congress. He served on the staff of the Congressional Electromagnetic Pulse Commission, as well as several other assignments in the Congress, including as a professional staff member of the House Armed Services Committee. He also put in many years at the Central Intelligence Agency as one of its analysts on threats of weapons of mass destruction and the like. So we're extraordinarily pleased to have an opportunity to talk with him about various issues related to his areas of expertise. Peter Pry, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you, Frank. Always a pleasure.
I guess I want to start with your thoughts on a topic we were discussing a moment ago with Andrew McCarthy, Peter, and that is, how serious a problem do you think it is that we have made the serial concessions we have to Iran on this so-called nuclear deal?
Oh, I think the deal is a farce. I think that this is worse than the agreed framework that Bill Clinton advertised was going to result in a non-nuclear North Korea. I think the critics are absolutely right that this is all about Obama's legacy and in a best-case scenario. In a worst-case scenario, it may be an attempt to move us away from Israel and change our traditional alliance relationships and reestablish some kind of a relationship with Iran, hoping that we can convert Iran into something like a normal nation state through the fiction of this deal.
Yeah, by as a practical matter, giving them nuclear weapons, that seems about as unlikely a means of incentivizing people to behave well, particularly to a whole host of countries that they have been threatening to destroy or otherwise to subvert. We're visiting with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He is today the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, which advises the United States Congress. He also directs the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Peter, we were talking a little bit about this deal as we speak. It has not yet quite been finalized, but by the time this program airs, it probably will have been. As best we can tell, given what it does in various ways to, well, I think of it as legitimate and facilitate an Iranian nuclear weapons program, as a serious intelligence professional in this space, how grave a threat do you think that represents, this nuclear bomb in the Iranians' hands, not just to Israel, not just to our friends and allies in the Middle East and Europe, but also to us here in the United States as well?
Well, it's an existential threat. It threatens the existence of the United States and of Western civilization. I think the threat is understated by those who see the greatest dimension of the threat as being that will encourage proliferation in the Middle East. They only need a single bomb to conduct an electromagnetic pulse attack, a high-altitude EMP attack. It would take down our power grid and collapse our other critical infrastructures and basically end us as a civilization. The EMP commission in which I served estimated that up to nine of ten Americans could perish in a year from starvation, disease, and societal collapse in the aftermath of a year-long blackout. Moreover, the other reason I think that this deal is a farce is that Iran may well already be a nuclear weapons state. I and former senior Reagan administration officials published an article a couple of months ago laying out a lot of the evidence that there's reason to think Iran already has the bomb, just like North Korea already had the bomb in the middle of the agreed framework negotiations with the Clinton administration.
And Peter, one of the other things that makes this so worrying is, as you say, they not only may have or certainly will have the capability to engage in an electromagnetic pulse attack against this country of unimaginably horrific consequence, even perhaps with just a single detonation over our country. But they've emphasized in their doctrine, apparently, how keen they are on that idea. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Sure. The EMP Commission found numerous open-source military writings by the Iranians describing EMP attacks as a means of taking the United States out as an actor on the world stage. And just recently, the intelligence community translated a new military textbook. It's an official piece of the military doctrine of Iran that, again, describes making a nuclear EMP attack against the United States. In fact, it makes reference to making EMP attacks and attacks on the power grid as the decisive way of achieving victory over the United States at least 20 times.
Peter, that brings me to another topic, or a very much related topic. We've just had reports of a major blackout in Turkey. Nation that has been a member of NATO for many years, seems to be increasingly at odds with the alliance and certainly with us, yet is a country that we have, I think, treated as a friend for decades. It has, for reasons yet to be determined, lost power in apparently dozens of cities. They've begun bringing it back slowly and piecemeal as we speak. But what does this episode suggest about the vulnerability of our own electric grid, to say nothing of that of others?
Yes, according to press reports that I've read, every province in Turkey has been affected by this blackout, with the exception of one, which imports its electricity from Iran. It's the only one that didn't go into blackout. And it, regardless of the cause, whether it was by accidental means or a cyber attack or physical sabotage, it again illustrates how attacking the electric grid and the critical civilian infrastructures that depend upon it is a potentially decisive new way of war. That's how the Iranians think about this, the North Koreans, the Russians, and the Chinese, that you can bring a country to its knees by going around its military and attacking its electric grid and its civilian critical infrastructures, because you can't operate without electricity. And it could have as a decisive effect as the Blitzkrieg did in World War II.
And to what extent, Peter Pry, and again, this is a subject matter on which you have developed deep expertise, are these vulnerabilities in our own electric grid unnecessary and could be remedied? And what is being done now to effect those remedies?
There's really no excuse for us to be vulnerable. The commission provided recommendations. You know, we know we have the technologies, blocking devices, Faraday cages, surge arresters that can protect against not only an EMP, but they would also mitigate all the lesser threats like cyber attacks, physical sabotage, and even severe weather were we to install these. It would be relatively inexpensive. The commission estimated it could cost about $2 billion to protect the whole country, the whole electric grid, $10 to $20 billion to protect all the critical infrastructures. The $2 billion to protect the electric grid is what we give away every year in foreign aid to Pakistan. So if we suspended aid to Pakistan for 1 year and spent it on our own people, you know, we could solve that problem. But the problem right now, as you well know, Frank, is the politics of EMP protection, not the money, not the technology. We know how to do it. We can afford to do it. But the electric power industry has got powerful lobbies and is actively opposing at the federal and even at the state level efforts to try to protect the electric grid. And they've been delaying our efforts for years.
This is all the more astonishing, Dr. Peter Pry, insofar as you'd think that the electric utilities would be at the very forefront of protecting what are, at the end of the day, mostly their assets. 85% or so of the civilian power distribution system in this country is in private sector hands. And I salute you for the work that you have been doing on the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act at the federal level, and especially the work you've been doing in Florida, Texas, and elsewhere, Dr. Peter Pry, to try to raise awareness of what states can do to protect their own grid and the foolishness, the danger, really, of waiting on the federal government to handle this problem. Peter, on these and so many other issues, you are our go-to guy. Thank you for taking a few minutes to join us. We look forward to talking with you again very soon. And speaking of emergency preparedness, we will speak with the Canadian minister responsible for that portfolio, Stephen Blaney, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
We're all part of your community.
We all play a role in keeping our community safe.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute, the nightmarish story of a pilot locked alone in a cockpit and deliberately killing himself and his passengers by crashing his plane, has just been seared into our consciousness. He sought a legacy, one that would make a life filled with disappointment and inadequacy somehow memorable. That maniacal and self-absorbed disregard for others is eerily reminiscent of President Obama's pursuit of a nuclear deal with Iran. He is willfully ignoring reality to achieve a legacy that he hopes will obscure his serial foreign policy failures. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake. The course President Obama has set on Iran has us headed towards a mountain. His deal will enable Iran's nuclear ambitions, not end them, and those ambitions explicitly include death to America. This deal must not fly and take us down. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by the Honorable Steve Blaney. He is the Canadian Minister of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, a member of the Canadian Parliament, of course. He is affiliated with the Conservative Caucus there, and his native province is Quebec, and he has previously served as the Minister for La Francophonie and as also Minister for Veterans Affairs in the Canadian government. He is currently leading the effort to improve the security legislation in Canada, and two of my colleagues, Claire Lopez, our Vice President for Research and Analysis, and Kyle Scheidler, who runs our Threat Information Office at the Center for Security Policy, were privileged to be able to testify before the Canadian Parliament at Minister Blaney's instigation. We're grateful for that, as well as for all you're doing north of the border to secure our very valued neighbor and ally in Canada. Minister Blaney, great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Frank, and I certainly enjoy going in the United States, and I've been for a long time, even when it goes back to the beaches of Maine, in Old Orchard Beach, around the Portland and Kennebunk. We're great neighbors, and we're also great friends, and it's good to be with you this morning.
And great allies, let me emphasize that, because we are facing what I call the war for the free world, as you know, Minister, and we're confronting terrorism particularly and nonviolent kinds of jihad as well. Talk, if you would, a little bit about the security situation that you have been confronting recently up there with a number of attacks and police officers and others.
Absolutely, and I'm proud, just before we begin, as you mentioned, this international jihadi terrorist threat, that yesterday our parliament voted in support of extending the mission of 1 year against the jihadi terrorists, against the so-called Islamic State. So we'll be together over there, Frank, with our American, but also along with more than nearly 60 countries to fight this evil organization that actually, and that's bringing back to your question, that actually are threatening us on our own soil, on our own Canadian soil, on our own North American soil. And that's why, as a government, our first duty is to protect our citizen. And you may be aware that we were a victim of two terrorist attacks before Christmas. It took place in my the very French part of the country, in Quebec, where I live, in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, on October the 20th, in our very own parliament. We had this terrorist who erupted and actually was neutralized, but that caused that attack an officer that was guarding our National War Memorial. So this is what took place, and certainly this number of high-risk travelers, so that's why we needed to take action to adjust to the evolving threat of terrorism, and that's why we table our anti-terrorism 2015 bill that is now in front both of committee at the Senate and at Parliament, and that we are willing to see a move quite swiftly, because we feel the emergency for those measures, for providing the tools to both our police and security officer so that they can better protect us.
Now, Minister Stephen Blaney, talk a little bit about what is in this legislation known as C-51, now before the Canadian Parliament.
Oh, it's fairly simple. You know, it's basic issues such as sharing information amongst the federal agency, enabling any information that is related to our security, that could represent a security, to be shared within our own government. I use the expression that the left hand of the government has to know what the right hand is doing. Many Canadians believe we were doing so, but indeed we need to put in place those mechanisms, respecting fully our Charter of Rights and our the privacy of individuals. So that's one of the five elements. There are other measures, like making sure that in case of an imminent threat, our police officer can make preventative arrest with judicial oversight, as well as criminalizing the promotion of terrorism and shutting down websites that are promoting hatred and violent speech. So these are the kinds of measures that are in the bill, and that are also part of our overall effort to make sure that our country is welcoming law-abiding citizens, but it is dealing with the full force of the law for those who are willing to harm us.
Let me ask a couple of quick questions, if I may, Minister. One of the things that, of course, is at work here, it seems, are organizations that have spun off of, or are, for that matter, even associated directly with, the Muslim Brotherhood. What are you making of that organization at the moment, the Brotherhood, and what steps are you thinking about in Canada to contend with what it seems to be about, which is not only violence where appropriate, but also a more stealthy kind of jihad where they can't use violence?
Well, what we have here, Frank, is a body that is reviewing an organization that could be represent a threat. We've listed recently an organization, and working with our five allies, along with, of course, our American fellow, we are listing terrorist entities, and there are thresholds that needs to be met so that these organizations can be listed. We have more than 60 organizations that are listed, and when they are so, then we cut the funding. It is illegal either to fund them, support them in any way. So that's why we have a threshold, and we are always reviewing the evidence that would lead us to list those entities. So in the case you are mentioning, I would leave it to our expert that would advise us, and it's based on those recommendations that we are listing those terrorist entities. It's an evolving list. Some groups are removed, some groups are added. So we rely on the intelligence of our Canadian Security Intelligence Service to list those entities.
Well, we look forward to seeing what you do on that, because, of course, there is legislation that's been introduced in the House down here to declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Let me ask you, and again, our guest is the Honorable Stephen Blaney. He is a member of Parliament in Canada and currently the Minister of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness there. One of the areas in which, of course, our interests align very closely is with respect to immigration. your illegal immigrants or immigrants who may come with a malign intent, of course, can very quickly become our illegal immigrants with malign intent in this country. Canada seems to have undergone something of a change in recent years, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of a very liberal policy towards immigration being made somewhat more restrictive. Am I right about that? And if so, why was that necessary?
You are absolutely right. And I must tell you, Canada is a welcoming country. You know, my name is Stephen Blaney. I come from a generation of Irish who came here because we were under feast and famine in Ireland. So Canada is built on immigration. We are a welcoming country. We're traders. You know, we cherish our trade relationship and partnership with the American. So for us, what is important is first to welcome law-abiding citizens, those who are following the rules. And actually, you may be interested to know that every year we welcome more than 250,000 new Canadians, which is relatively high when you compare. We have a population of a little bit less than around 35 million people. So this is the reality. We are a welcoming country, but those who are willing to come here illegally, and we have a lot of legal means they can use if they want to, whether challenge their refusal. Well, then we just say, well, you have to go back home because you entered here. You cannot jump the queue. There are procedures. We are welcoming, but we won't let people abuse of the generosity of our system. So that's why every year we roughly have to send back around 20,000 people who have entered illegally, and we feel we owe it to those who are entering legally and to those Canadian taxpayers who don't want individual to abuse from their generosity. So that's how it works. And in this, that's also why we feel so important to keep our border safe. And that's why we work in so a close relationship with you, because you're the only land border we have. And that's why we just signed recently an agreement with Secretary Jay Johnson to reinforce the security at the border while making it sure that those who want to trade, those who want to travel, are free to do so.
Minister Blaney, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck with C-51, this very important piece of legislation that I think of as bearing very directly on our security as well as on that of our Canadian friends. Keep up the terrific work you're doing, sir, and I do hope you'll come back to us. We've been talking about grid vulnerability, and I know in the matter of emergency preparedness that falls within your portfolio. Perhaps we can get you back on again soon to talk about how you're coping with that problem north of the border. In the meantime, sir, thank you very much for your service to your country and to our alliance. Keep it up, and we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Heather McDonald joins us. We'll talk a bit more about immigration from this side of the border's perspective with her. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation. For us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitch with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat Al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the global jihad movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined for the first time, amazingly enough, by an old friend and much admired colleague, Heather McDonald. She is the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, a marvelous organization in New York City. She is also a contributing editor to the Institute's wonderful product, City Journal, the author of numerous books, including most recently, The Immigration Solution, A Better Plan Than Today's. I came across her writing recently in a reprint of a speech on the wonderful Hillsdale College Imprimis publication and thought, well, where has she been for the past decade? And thought, let's get her on. Heather, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Thank you for all that you've done in the intervening period, and I'm sorry that we've not been in closer touch, but it's good to catch up with you now.
Well, it's certainly great to be on your show, Frank. I so appreciate it. This is wonderful.
Good. Well, let's talk a bit about your practical thoughts on immigration. They seem so commonsensical, and yet they are not much in evidence in what passes for debate about this subject in Washington these days.
Well, what concerns me most, Frank, is simply the steady erosion of the rule of law. And the lesson that we should learn from the last 20 years of immigration policy is that lawlessness only breeds more lawlessness. For the last 20 years, cities, states, and the federal government have been winking at immigration violations, have been trying to normalize people's status that are in the country illegally by handing out benefits. And the culmination we've seen happened late last year when President Obama decided to make his own law regarding large-scale amnesty for illegal aliens, plunging this country into a full-scale constitutional crisis.
Boy, I couldn't agree more with that. And I want to sort of take these up in pieces if we can. The Manhattan Institute, and I think your good self most especially, were very much at the center of an incredibly important reform in New York City. I think it came to be known as the broken windows theory. But it was basically exactly what you say. You tolerate lawlessness, you tolerate evidence of lawlessness, and it just begets more of it. So this seems to imply from a policy point of view that you start by not extending amnesty or benefits or other concessions to people who have broken the law, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Lawbreaking doesn't stay put. There's a great chain of being in unlawful behavior, and the small things lead to the large things. And what I find particularly infuriating about our current immigration situation is that big city police chiefs, none other than William Bratton, who was the pioneer of New York City's policing revolution in the 1990s and brought about the longest and steepest crime drop in recorded history through, in part, a belief in paying attention to low-level crimes, is now ignoring that wisdom when it comes to immigration lawbreaking and is refusing to cooperate with the paltry efforts of the Obama administration upon occasion to try to pick up and deport illegal alien criminals. And Bratton and other big city chiefs like Los Angeles's Charles Beck, the head of the Los Angeles Police Department there, are also saying, oh, well, illegal aliens who are not only here illegally but are engaged in a pattern of misdemeanor offenses, they should be protected from deportation. This is just an amazing act of hypocrisy, but it's also a warning to this country as to the fact that right now demographics is destiny. We have certainly the Democratic Party and increasingly large swaths of the Republican Party taking their stance on the law based on the fact that the Hispanic population is growing. It's now almost a majority in California. And principles are being cast aside in order to cater to that demographic reality.
This is so disconcerting. As you say, we see this kind of exemplified in the phenomenon of these so-called sanctuary cities. I don't know if New York is one. I believe Los Angeles is. But what do you make of the sort of institutionalizing of this idea that these places will be effectively, if not law-free, certainly immigration law-free zones? Heather McDonald.
Well, certainly New York is a sanctuary city. I mean, even our previous Republican mayor lauded the fact that there was going to be no immigration enforcement in New York City while he was mayor. And, of course, our current socialist mayor, Bill de Blasio, has gone further and has created a ID card for illegal aliens. It's a very worrisome development. And what also I've been following for years with just horror, but also a sense of the importance of this development, is the civil disobedience, which is, put it more positively than it deserves to be called, the rejection of the Secure Communities Program, which I think is a real harbinger of where we're going. The Secure Communities Program is a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned, and should be for anybody. It merely held that if an illegal alien criminal, that is somebody who has committed other crimes after having entered the country illegally or overstayed his visa, if he then is booked into a local jail or prison for crimes like selling drugs or driving drunk or felony assault, the federal government's immigration authorities, which are now known as ICE, they used to be INS, but today it's ICE, would be alerted to the fact that an illegal alien criminal has been booked into a jail in order to give the federal government the option of initiating deportation proceedings against that illegal alien criminal when he's finished serving his time. ICE rarely even uses its power to initiate deportation proceedings. Only in about 20% of the cases that are brought to its attention does it actually get off its butt and do something. But that minute effort to deport illegal alien criminals has been viewed for years by the illegal alien lobby as a human rights violation. And cities and states have been urged by the illegal alien lobby to defy the federal government's requests for a so-called detainer, to hold an illegal alien criminal before releasing him back to the streets in order to allow the government, the federal government, to initiate deportation. And lo and behold, 300 jurisdictions across the country, including whole states like New York State and California, as well as places like New York City and Los Angeles, refuse to honor the federal government's detainer requests. And the theory behind this goes far beyond deporting illegal alien criminals. If we can't even deport an illegal alien criminal, what's at stake here is the deportation power per se, and that now has been completely delegitimated. And the federal government has now eviscerated the Secure Communities Program. It has thrown in the towel and said, okay, we're not even going to ask for these detainers anymore, except in the most heinous cases of, you know, severe repeat felons.
Yeah. Heather McDonald, what you've just laid out is so troubling and really is grounds for a much, much more lengthy and in-depth conversation, which I hope you'll indulge us in the near future. But the point you made at the beginning is so evident here. This really does give rise to a constitutional crisis. Our ability to secure our borders, our ability to police our cities from illegal aliens, particularly criminal illegal aliens, and the unwillingness of states and localities to cooperate to those ends gives rise to a level of lawlessness that I couldn't agree with you more, is a real peril to everything we stand for. Heather, I hope you will come back to us again very soon. Heather is, again, the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, the author of The Immigration Solution, A Better Plan Than Today's, and also check out her marvelous speech at Imprimis, the Hillsdale College publication. Keep up the good work, my dear. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.